The Maharishi's Way by Arthur Osborne. Sri Bhagavan discouraged anything eccentric in dress or behavior and any display of ecstasy. It has already been shown how he disapproved of the desire for visions and powers, and how he preferred that householders strive in the conditions of family and professional life. He evoked no spectacular changes in devotees, for such changes may be a superstructure without foundation and collapse later. Indeed, it sometimes happened that a devotee would grow despondent, seeing no improvement at all in himself, and would complain that he was not progressing in such cases. Sri Bhagavan might offer consolation, or he might retort, "How do you know there is no progress?" And he would explain that it is the guru, not the disciple, who sees the progress made. It is for the disciple to carry on perseveringly with his work, even though the structure being raised may be out of sight of the mind. It may sound a hard path, but the disciple's love for Bhagavan and the graciousness of his smile gave it beauty. Any exaggerated course, such as mauna or silence, was also discouraged. On at least one occasion, Sri Bhagavan made this very clear. Hearing that Major Chadwick intended to go mauni next day, he spoke at length against the practice, pointing out that speech is a safety wall, and that it is better to control it than to renounce it, and making fun of people who give up speaking with their tongue and speak with a pencil instead. The real bhavana is in the heart, and it is possible to remain silent in the midst of speech, just as it is to remain solitary in the midst of people. Sometimes it is true there was exaggeration in accordance with the concealed nature of his upadesa. Sri Bhagavan would seldom explicitly bid or forbid, and yet those who embarked on any exaggerated course must have felt his disapproval, even if they did not admit it to themselves, for they almost invariably began absenting themselves from the hall. I recollected one such case where the mental balance was threatened, and Sri Bhagavan said explicitly, "Why does she not come to me?" One has to know how scrupulously he avoided giving explicit instructions or telling anyone to come or go, how skillfully he parried any attempt to maneuver him into doing so, how binding and how precious the slightest indication of his will was considered in order to appreciate the significance of such a saying. In this case, the devotee did not come, and shortly afterwards, her mind was unhinged. This was not the only instance. Despite the air of normality, the terrific force radiating from Sri Bhagavan was too potent for some who came. It was noticeable that in any such case, as soon as the mental balance had been restored, the person would cease to seclude himself and begin coming to the ashram. It was also noticeable that Sri Bhagavan would sometimes scold such a person like a naughty child who had permitted himself some indulgence that he could and should have resisted. In a fairly high proportion of cases, a fight began to be put up under his influence, and the sufferer struggled back to normality. Although such cases have to be mentioned in order to complete the picture, it should not be imagined from the space bestowed on them that they were at all frequent. They always remained rare. It is hard to postulate anything definite about the methods of Sri Bhagavan because exceptions can often be found. There were cases when his instructions were explicit, especially if one could approach him alone. Anantha Narayan Rao, a retired veterinary surgeon who had built a house near the ashram, had several times been summoned urgently to Madras, where his brother-in-law was seriously ill. On one occasion, he received a telegram to this effect, and although it was late in the evening, took it straight to Sri Bhagavan. Previously, Sri Bhagavan had not appeared to pay much attention, but this time he said, "Yes, yes, you must go." And he began speaking of the unimportance of death. A.N. Rao went home and told his wife that this time the disease might be fatal. They reached Madras a couple of days before his brother-in-law passed away. One heard occasionally of more dynamic instances also, such as a devotee being instructed to use the name Ramana as an invocation, but they were never much spoken about. Usually, a devotee would himself take a decision and then announce it tentatively. The desiring was a part of his sadhana. If it was rightly done, there would be a smile of approval that made the heart sing, perhaps a brief verbal consent. If the decision was not approved, that also would usually be visible. A householder once announced his decision to leave Tiruvannamalai for some other town where he could get a better paying job. Sri Bhagavan laughed. "Everyone is free to make plans." The plan did not come off. When one of India's political leaders went to Madras to hold meetings, an attendant who was an admirer of his asked leave to go there. Sri Bhagavan sat with a face like stone, as though he had not heard. Nevertheless, the attendant went. He rushed from meeting to meeting, arriving always too late or failing to obtain admission. And when he got back, Sri Bhagavan teased him about it. "So, you went to Madras without permission? Did you have a successful trip?" So completely devoid of ego was he that he could talk or joke about his own actions as naturally and impersonally as about those of anyone else. The influence of Sri Bhagavan was to turn one from the pleasure and pain, the hope and anxiety that are caused by circumstances, to the inner happiness that is one's true nature. And realizing this, there were devotees who never asked for anything, even in mental prayer, but strove instead to overcome the attachment that gives rise to wishes. Even though they had not completely succeeded, it would have seemed a sort of betrayal to go to Sri Bhagavan with a request for outer benefits. For anything but greater love, greater steadfastness greater understanding. If afflictions came, the method was not to seek to get them removed, but to ask, to whom is this affliction? Who am I? And thus draw nearer to conscious identity with that which suffers neither birth nor death nor any affliction. And if any turned to Sri Bhagavan with that intention, peace and strength would flow into him. Human nature being what it is, there were also devotees who did ask Sri Bhagavan for help and protection in the events of life. Taking a different point of view, they looked upon him as a father and mother and turned to him whenever any trouble or danger threatened. Either they would write a letter telling him about it or simply pray to him wherever they might be, and their prayers were answered. The trouble or danger would be averted, or in cases where that was not possible or beneficial, peace and fortitude would flow into them to endure it. Help came to them spontaneously with no volitional intervention on the part of Sri Bhagavan. That does not mean that it was due to merely to the fate of the devotee. It was due to the grace that emanated from him in response to the fate of the devotee. So is to from Ramana Maharishi and Path of Self-Knowledge.